WCNC Charlotte. This is Flashpoint.
Thanks for joining us here on Flashpoint. I'm Ben Thompson. This weekend, thousands descending on Uptown for March Madness, bringing not only college basketball, but big business for an area that frankly struggled through the pandemic. Ahead, why Charlotte's Central Business District is thriving, especially compared to other peer cities. Then a bit later, electric vehicle investments booming here in North Carolina. Ahead, the new report shedding light on that exploding business. But first, joining us now is James LeVar. He's the Senior Vice President of Economic Development for Charlotte Center City Partners. James, thanks for coming back on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning, Ben.
It's a big weekend for Charlotte with March Madness. And it seems like at this point, Uptown is getting its groove back. So how important are weekends like this?
Yeah, good question. This type of weekend is really critical. You know, the last 4 years have been really tough on downtowns across the country, with pandemic lockdowns, protests, tough monetary policies in order to continue construction projects. So what we've been seeing across the country, and Charlotte is actually leading in this, is that central business districts in downtowns are transforming into central activity districts. And so that means a variety of different activities coming into downtowns. And Uptown and South End, Midtown, Charlotte Center City is really lucky to have venues like the Spectrum Center that is hosting March Madness this weekend. The Bank of America Stadium that's got all of Charlotte FC, Panthers, college activities, big concerts coming in. So we're really lucky to have that infrastructure in place to really make that transition from a central business district. So just think of typical office complex to a place where it has a variety of activities, local restaurants, museums, cultural centers, concerts and the basketball tournaments.
What would you say to other cities out there, other central business districts that are not quite seeing the success that Uptown is seeing?
Yeah, so I think some downtowns across the country have moved those large stadium assets outside of their downtown, maybe chasing cheaper land values or trying to build something like brand new. And so one of the things that Charlotte's done really well is that we've concentrated those series of assets into a central location surrounded by robust transportation networks, surrounded by office, surrounded by 35 to 40,000 people living. So you get these great walk zones between, going to an international soccer match to going to a March Madness event or going to a baseball game or a outside hockey game, going over to the ballet. And so that concentration of assets with that transportation network, some other cities have moved away from with that and kind of distributed it more. We have a real nice cultural concentration here in Charlotte.
I saw Thursday night, I saw light rail packed. Thousands of people. And it, as an urbanite myself, as someone who doesn't live uptown but lives near uptown, it was great to see. And I'm sure people like you want to see more of that. Does this make a good case for increasing our transit options out there?
Absolutely. Infrastructure is a key piece of the economic development story. And in order for a lot of people ask us, like, are we back yet to 2019? And for a couple of years now, we've been talking about we're not going back, we're going forward. And so we got to stay competitive with our peer set of cities, and infrastructure is a key component to staying competitive in a place that's attractive to stay and also attractive for people moving in, attractive for those large concerts that are looking for venues across the country. Transportation is a key component of figuring that out. And so it's an important piece of that moving forward. Another important piece moving forward too is the infrastructure of small businesses. And so in 2023, we had more than 30 small businesses pop up, start in Uptown. And so we've had a series of new businesses starting now in early 2024, and we've got some new ones coming on. All those visitors coming in, or people working, or people living in Uptown and South End, they want that authentic experience, and small businesses do it in a really vibrant way.
What's the economic impact of a weekend like this?
So that's interesting you ask. Like, it'll take a little bit of numbers to bring that to fruition, but we're really anticipating March Madness to be one of the top 10 weekends for Charlotte across the year. Last year, Luke Combs really blew it out of the water with 260 to 265,000 visits on each of those concert days. Right now, the best event that we have going on right now is the Charlotte FC home opener, more than 180 to 190,000 visits of people coming in. And we're anticipating that March Madness also delivers in that range somewhere of 200,000 visits. That first round of March Madness is really fascinating because you get so many teams. And so you get all these supporters coming in. Like yesterday on the street, you saw UNC, Chapel Hill, Texas, Michigan State. So it was awesome to see all those different schools and groups coming in.
You've talked about this sort of conversion of Uptown to being a more of a activity district and less just a place for work is what it has been for so long. But that switch to activity district, I think that's a 7-day-a-week culture. That's a 7-day-a-week thing. But some of the big events you're talking about, March Madness, Luke Combs, Beyonce last year, how do those figure into your strategy for Uptown?
Sure. So one of the things that's really interesting is actually all those different types of activities, whether it be a new restaurant to Beyonce, actually attracts talent of tomorrow. So one of the things that we're seeing in the office sector is that the office that everybody wants to go into, and so employers need to ask less of those employees, like, hey, please come in. No, like they're wanting to come in order to collaborate. And they're looking for office that is surrounded by a variety of uses, as opposed to office that is surrounded by more office. And so those variety of uses include a small business opening, or the, hey, after work, I can go to a Beyonce concert, or after work, I can go to the Blumenthal show and watch Shrek the musical. All those different things are, hey, in April, we have the Shout Festival. And so 17 days of art, music, food, that in between meetings, at lunch, before work, after work, that you can walk to those things. And that's a really important component, again, to attract the talent of tomorrow.
I mean, you make a compelling case for the health of Uptown. What strikes me, one downside could be crime, recent crime. Being that Uptown is an economic engine for the Carolinas, people don't want to go though if it's not going to be safe. What's your message to police, and perhaps more importantly, to lawmakers about the importance of keeping and protecting Uptown and making sure that it's safe?
Yeah, no, safety is paramount. Any visitor that comes in needs to feel so comfortable that they would bring their family, whether it be their grandmother or grandfather in the 80s or grandchildren 8 years or younger. And so that's a really important piece. On that note, safety statistics have shown that downtowns are actually safer than they have been, but there's a key component of perception. And we believe that that perception piece, not only is having presence of CMPD and to be seen, but also it's the influx of people coming into one's downtown to see those fans, to see those showgoers, to see those people going into that restaurant. So that increased activity with increased presence will bring not only the statistics down, but it'll also bring the perception of safety up. So that is the formula that we are moving forward with, really important partnerships and stakeholders, including CMPD, our ambassador program down in Uptown, and so and everything to large employers as well.
Well, I know times are tough there for a couple of years in Uptown and in downtowns across the country. So as a Charlottean, it's good to see things going so well. All right, James LaBarre, a Senior Vice President of Economic Development for Charlotte Center City Partners. James, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it, Ben. Have a good weekend.
Still to come here on Flashpoint, major electric vehicle investments are headed to North Carolina. Up next, the big economic impacts. Welcome back to Flashpoint. A new report shows North Carolina is really leading the country in new electric vehicle investments. And those investments are only helping fuel the state's economy. Joining us now is David Kelly. He's the North Carolina State Director for the Environmental Defense Fund. Welcome to Flashpoint. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Ben. Excited to be here.
So a new report just released shows North Carolina leads the country in electric vehicle manufacturing industry. What makes the state of North Carolina such an ideal place?
Sure. Well, I guess I'd start a little higher level than that and say the report we released, I think, offers really good evidence that the bipartisan infrastructure law and the IRA adopted by Congress are helping to unlock private capital investment to grow EV and battery manufacturing and their supply chain industries. In North Carolina, I think we pair that policy support with a world-class workforce and a strong reputation that we have as a state as a leader in the clean tech industry space, and that we're seeing the benefits of that competitive advantage relative to our peer states.
So a combination of the federal legislation you mentioned as well as our local advantages here in North Carolina. So is there room for more electric vehicle growth here, do you think?
I think so. I think what we're seeing is just the beginning of this, really. I mean, to go back to the report a little bit and share that context, we partnered with a firm, WSP, which is a leading engineering, environment, and professional services firm, to inventory and assess concrete facility-level investment announcements for EV and battery manufacturing and supply chain industries. We see that in just the last 6 months, North Carolina has seen $9 billion in additional investment, and that's in addition to the $10 billion of announced investment as of last August. As you mentioned at the outset, that's the most growth over that time period of any other state. At the moment, we only trail Georgia and automaker juggernaut Michigan for total EV industry in investment since November 2021, when the bipartisan infrastructure law passed. I think that North Carolina has tremendous opportunity to continue to build that momentum. One piece is on the market side, right? As we see lead investments like the Toyota battery plant or the VinFast production facility, there's market incentive for their suppliers and component manufacturers to locate near those operations. And that can create kind of a pylon effect and facilitate the emergence of a manufacturing hub dynamic. I think there's also an opportunity for state policy. Executive orders, goal setting, other policy activity can send at the state level, can send really important signals to the marketplace that North Carolina is open for business and wants to be a leader in this space.
You talked about the economic impact and the money. What impact has it had on jobs here in North Carolina?
So a lot of these initial investments will create jobs, like in the construction space as we build these facilities. The jobs announced along with the facilities, so the jobs created and retained for our workforce, are around 14,000 jobs associated with that $20 billion of capital investment. And like I said, that's exclusive of the construction and other jobs that will be served as we build these new facilities.
Talk to me about, you mentioned the fact that the state, its role in this, and state lawmakers will be the first to tell you that we've been rated best in business 2 years in a row by CNBC. What else can they do to help spur some of this growth?
Well, like I mentioned, things like goal setting, even something as simple as that can help. There's also the traditional economic development tools available to the state. If we want to get more specific in the EV policy space, supportive policies like EV-ready construction for private and commercial development, making it easier or being able to consider procurement of electric vehicles by looking at the total cost of ownership when state and local governments are looking to modernize their fleets of vehicles. Things like that really helps send the signal that not only do we want the manufacturing, but there's a market for the products, growing market for the products here in North Carolina.
Have you found folks in Raleigh have been receptive to your industry?
In general, I think it cuts across some of our typical political divides. Everybody's interested in North Carolina's economic competitiveness, creating jobs and bringing investment to our states. We've seen this story play out in the clean tech space before in the last decades, as North Carolina really rocketed to national and even international leadership in the solar energy space. We're seeing similar trends start to take root in the electric vehicle space, and there's a real opportunity for North Carolina to embrace this industry. you know, for us at Environmental Defense Fund, we're interested in electric vehicles because they're better for our climate, because there is a lower overall cost of ownership for customers and fleet operators, and they're better for our health because they help eliminate tailpipe pollution. But there's a strong economic story to tell, and we get most excited about opportunities where the economics and the environment align. The growth of this industry in North Carolina can help us move toward a more sustainable future and a more profitable one.
Yeah, we always get excited here about issues that cut across partisan lines, because it means things are getting done and we're making some progress. Generally speaking, is demand keeping up with supply when it comes to these things?
I think so. I mean, I think what the fact of these industry investments, I think, tells us that the industry sees this as a direction they want to go, that they recognize there's a growing segment of customers who are interested in this kind of product.
All right, David Kelly, the director for the Environmental Defense Fund here in North Carolina. David, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Ben.
Still to come on Flashpoint, crime surging across Charlotte, and now our youngest leaders are taking a stand. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Local leaders and youth in the community coming together this week trying to solve a rise in violence across Charlotte. WCNC Charlotte's Tredicia Woodard shares how the two sides are seeking solutions to an ongoing crisis.
Well, City Council member Tijuana Brown says their mission here was not to talk about kids or at kids, but to listen. No interruptions, no judgment.
A painful moment of silence and heavy hearts, all in memory of Jaslyn Horn. She lost her life at Cookout on Sunset Road last week.
My peers' faces are immortalized under the glare of candlelight and the weight of balloons.
It was just one example to start the youth-led discussion about gun violence. While some kids spoke out about change,
something needs to be done now.
Others spoke out about living in fear. They say kids are crying for help. But who's helping?
I'm sick and tired of dropping flowers off to mothers. I'm tired of having the lingering thought that hanging out at this party might be my last.
We're scared to walk to Bojangles, Burger King, where we should be feel like we want to eat, but we can't eat at the table because we're feeling like we're going to get shot down walking out to our vehicles.
Some students pushed not only for officials and law enforcement to step up.
You make decisions like your child is behind that gun.
But they also encouraged their peers to reclaim the streets from the grip of violence.
Can pick up boxing gloves, can pick up a book, can pick up a Chromebook, can pick up something else to ensure that they can take their anger out in a positive manner.
As teens continued to voice their concerns and push for solutions, they finished with one question. Will you listen?
How many more people have to die?
And Mayor Lyles also expressing concerns on youth violence, releasing a letter saying we're losing too many of our kids, pushing for investments in things like education and mental health resources. Reporting for WCNC Charlotte, I'm Tredicia Woodard.
Up next, the debate underway that could bring hundreds of homes to South Charlotte. Welcome back to Flashpoint. South Charlotte neighbors are making their voices heard this morning, pushing back on plans to build a lot more homes in a neighborhood. It comes as city leaders consider two big developments that could bring more than 1,000 new housing units to either side of 485. WCNC Charlotte's Julia Kaufman takes a closer look.
Both projects total about 180 acres and could create a mix of housing totaling over 1,500 units. One project is smaller than the other, but is being met with fierce opposition.
People in green flooded the government center Monday, but it wasn't for St. Patrick's Day.
This is very rare, something like this.
Two big rezoning petitions in Councilman Ed Driggs' district are being considered at the same time. Piper Glen residents are urging city officials to vote no on the petition to build 640 apartments and townhomes, mostly for a retirement community on 53 acres next to the 4 Mile Greenway.
We've asked them three times to reduce it, and they haven't.
The land, called the Gillespie property, will be developed. Driggs says the decision is whether to allow the developer to build houses and duplexes as allowed in the UDO, or rezone the property for higher density but with added community benefits.
Our UDO promotes the idea of higher density housing and a diversity of housing types. So people in single family home areas are thinking, I don't want that here. That's not what this area is like.
His district is also home to 125 acres of farmland called the Cato property on Tom Short Road. It could be the future home to over 900 apartments, townhomes, and houses, plus a middle school. But neighbors oppose this petition, too.
If the Gillespie rezoning was an exhibit for overcrowding and over-densifying Charlotte, the Cato rezoning is exhibit 1B for that.
Driggs says he will not support the Gillespie proposal as it stands, but the Cato one has promise.
No, I'm just hoping on the Cato in particular that we can work with the residents to achieve an improvement on the stormwater side and a minimum impact on traffic.
Charlotte leaders noted this public hearing highlights issues in the city's new zoning code called the UDO. They think more work needs to be done to ensure infrastructure can support growth. In Uptown, Julia Kaufman, WCNC Charlotte.
And we'll see you back here next weekend.